Innovation Conversations from the Southwest Innovation Expo.
Hello, and thank you for joining us for another episode of Innovation Conversations from the Southwest Innovation Expo, recorded here at Sandy Park in Exeter. We're looking at net zero, the intricate balance between sustainability and growth on the journey achieving net zero emissions, and how we can all do our bit towards that all-important net zero target. I'm joined by Mandy Burton, Circular Engineering Design Consultant and Visiting Research Fellow for the University of Plymouth, Saul Whitford, Knowledge Exchange and Impact Officer for the University of Plymouth, and Russ Wakeham, who is the CEO of Two Drifters Rum and now my best friend. So I'm going to ask Saul a very simple question, but probably not a very simple answer. Or is it? What is net zero?
Net zero is really about kind of balancing human-related greenhouse gases which are being emitted into the atmosphere, and about balancing those, but really more about balancing those. It's about actually reducing them in the first place, trying to avoid them, looking at how then they can be kind of mitigated within the kind of processes. And then anything that's residual left after that, then that being offset. So to getting us to a zero balance, essentially.
Mandy, we're all on this journey towards net zero, particular organisations and small businesses that were using energy. We're creating outputs in various shapes and forms. As a business, perhaps might be struggling to find that balance between meeting our objectives from a business standpoint and achieving net zero. Is it a complicated thing to achieve, and what are your tips?
It can be, but it can be very simple. So there are lots of steps that businesses can take, as individuals can, to start to reduce their carbon footprint. So it could be about looking into renewable energy, so installing PV on the roof, but more than our energy use from transport and for our heating and electricity needs, for example, we're also looking at the way that we produce the products that we use. So it's about looking into different ways of employing circular economy strategies. So this is where we're not taking something out of the earth, making it into something, using it for a bit and then throwing it away. That's the old linear model, and one that we're still pretty hooked onto. But the call to action for reducing our carbon footprints is also about the way that we can build economies around circular systems. So rather than the linear model, you're looking at ways that you can use things for longer, that you can repair things, that you can keep them in use, and that we design them so that at the end of their useful life, they can be dismantled into components or into materials, and even at the molecular level, to bring them back into circular use. And all of that reduces your carbon footprint.
Our listeners may well wonder why I've got the CEO of a rum company sat beside me. It's not in order to get free samples. It's because this is a subject that's very close to you, isn't it?
Very much so, yeah. We are a rum distillery with a carbon negative footprint. So what that means is thinking about the entire life cycle of our products, what we produce, where they get distributed, how people consume them, and all the emissions and that are tied up in that product. And then we will avoid as much as we can within our entire supply chain and find ways to kind of reduce, avoid as much of the emissions as possible. Anything we can't avoid, we then pay a company who are our partners, Climeworks, to remove those emissions through their direct air capture technology. So physically remove it from the atmosphere, convert it into stone mineralization, and then it's permanently stored underground. So that's how we achieve a carbon negative footprint. But the big thing about that is it's a very expensive way to remove carbon. And so it really focuses the business mind. How do we avoid? Like, we really have to think about every emission, because it's a tax that we essentially don't want to pay as a business. So you are forced into thinking about it. So we keep it at the core of the business.
It sounds like you've had to do a lot of analysis here. Every step of the microscopic steps that your product takes in its journey.
Yeah, so I would say the biggest challenge is analysing and understanding your impact today, right? That's every business's challenge, is just taking stock of where you are. Once you've done that aspect, you will see other ways that you can reduce very quickly, reduce your impact quite a lot. But measuring it is, yeah, it's a big undertaking, but it's a big part of it.
You mentioned the topic of supply chain. So organisations can have very complex supply chains, whether they know it or not. You know, when I go to a shop, I buy something, but behind that is a whole process of supplying raw materials, procurement. How do we ensure that all these steps in the supply chain are doing their bit to work towards net zero target.
Yeah, so it's a really difficult thing, and it kind of falls under the scope three, which is between sort of maybe 80%, 90%, 95% of the carbon emissions of a company or a business or even for a person. And so, yeah, it can be really, really hard to establish what that is. But the first step is really just by asking the question of your suppliers, people that we talk about sort of spheres of influence and how you can actually have an impact on those people that you actually know or are within that supply chain. So just asking them the question in the first instance, you know, what are you doing? What's your strategy? Have you got an environmental policy, a sustainability policy, and what their carbon strategy is and how they're getting to net zero? And a lot of times you can actually help each other. So we kind of find it's kind of a supply-led or demand-led scenario. So like Russ's instance saying, actually, we want to go to our suppliers. I think you spoke about the glassware and actually said, look, we want a more net zero or a more carbon, less intensive glass. Mm-hmm. And so they then delivered that. And I'm sure you'll be able to explain it in much more detail, but it's about kind of having those conversations with your supply chain and kind of really understanding it and helping one another to kind of get to that common goal, really.
Supply chain, also a circular economy as well. Mandy, you mentioned it earlier. How aware are we about what's happening here?
I'm very aware because I'm right in the middle of circular economy, and I know I'm having fewer conversations with people where I have to actually explain what the circular economy is. I think we're getting a lot more switched on, both as consumers about how we can access products and services without necessarily owning them. There's lots of really interesting leasing models that are coming through. People are really engaged with the repair agenda, with wanting to get value from spending their hard-earned money on products. So I think we're seeing a lot of businesses that are actually building relationships in a different way with their customers. So it's not just about selling them something in the first place and then, you know, then maybe coming back in a few years when they need to replace it. But it's about developing connections so that you've got the ability to go back to somebody that you've bought a product from and get it repaired. And businesses are finding ways to unlock revenue from different business models that are less energy intensive.
The repair agenda, that's a really interesting thing, because manufacturers and producers of products and services, they invest in equipment, they will repair it, they have to maintain it. Us as consumers, we don't have that approach when it comes to the devices in the palm of our hand and the computers that we use and the TVs that we watch. There used to be a time, and I'm going to reveal my age here, there used to be a time when if your washing machine went belly up, you get it fixed. We're not like that anymore, are we, in many ways?
No, not at the moment, for sure. And it's definitely gone too far, hasn't it? I think we need to come back to that repair mentality. And I guess you've seen it with Apple introducing their repairs for all the goods, that it's starting to come. But I guess that sort of thing, as well as the carbon intensity, needs to be government led. I think, yeah, you need to be nudged into behaving that way. And so businesses do too.
A specific example of innovation, Saul touched on it just now. He mentioned about glass.
Yeah.
Tell us more about that.
Well, actually, it kind of links all of our bits, because mm-hmm. the circular part from our perspective as a rum distillery is thinking about, okay, we deliver a glass bottle with a product inside. If we got that glass bottle back and we could fill it back up again, then that's a really easy way for the circular economy to kind of work, right? But it comes with so many challenges in terms of food safety, like the hygiene, and also physically getting it back from a central location. So if we distribute our product to a load of bars across the whole country, how do we get all of their recycled glass back to us to fill up again and keep it right? So practically, it's difficult.
Yes, because you need to do that without sending loads of lorries around, picking everything back up again, I guess.
Right, and undoing all the good you've tried to do. So, yeah, it comes with issues around that. But one way is to deliver a glass bottle and have that in a bar and then deliver a bulk container that they refill the bottle from, right? So those sorts of things, they happen. But those containers that you send are then plastic. So you've undone a bit of good as well. So there isn't a single good answer to that yet.
Okay, so there will be those that are listening who are the doubters. They don't want to be engaged with this. They just want to let it wash over their heads and they just don't want to know anything more. What would you say to them?
The issue is that it's happening around you and kind of trying to make it really relatable and put it in a context so that those people that do doubt it find some relevance to it. So people are seeing the fact that there's storms on the news, there's flooding, and people are finding, you know, the example I often use is people's insurance is going up and they're saying, well, why is my insurance going up? It's because before there was only, you know, so many massive storms that were happening, and so the insurance companies are having to pay out for that. And now they're having to pay out more and more. So the cost of actually insuring it is becoming more and more. So it's things like that that's actually trying to make it as relevant as possible to people. And it's, the science is irrefutable. I read something the other day. It's 97% of scientific papers peer-reviewed, which all agree that it's human cause is of climate change due to greenhouse gas emissions. So it's unequivocal. It's irrefutable. Yeah, and I'm, you know, happy to have conversations with people about that and kind of be challenged on it, because it's, yeah, something that I enjoy.
You mentioned research and organisations, particularly larger educational organisations, they lead on research. It's by the very nature of what they do. What role does education have to play in all this, Mandy, do you say?
A really big role, I think. As every different discipline and sector has, I think it's a real call to action for everyone, whatever business you're in, whatever stage of life you're at. We see climate literacy programs in schools now and going out to businesses. The amazing innovation festival today, the Southwest Innovation Expo, hearing about the relation between academic research and industry and businesses, and how you reach that innovation sweet spot when you get people talking to each other. So I think education, there's a lot more to do. I think it's not embedded within schools yet, but we can see the needle starting to move, and we've been working in Devon in particular with developing education programs around climate change. And that's the start, because our kids are really innovative by their nature, and it's trying to unlock that power and helping them to realise the agency that they have in building solutions into the future. And the story throughout our system, really, that you know, we can get a better understanding, and then that starts to accelerate change that we're looking for.
Absolutely. For those that are, say, for example, in business now, they run small businesses. Let's talk about them, because it's probably the SMEs and the micro businesses that really don't know where to start. Where do they start, Russ?
I think it's, as I said before, that measuring and understanding where you are today is the critical bit. It's tricky because it's time consuming. It's obviously a resource of either, well, money mainly is what it's going to come down to. But the long game, if you want to differentiate yourself as a business and stand out from the crowd, getting ahead of it is clearly the way to go. That's been shown throughout history. So it's inevitable that it's coming, because, you know, we've heard all this education piece and we know the scientific evidence is overwhelming. So why not get ahead of it? Measuring it is the place to start. Yeah.
Very good point. One final takeaway or comment, Saul?
To echo Russ's point, as we're seeing that net zero is going to be happening, and it's going to be on the agenda. And I always like to make it, again, relatable and put it into context. So if your main key priority is paying your staff at the end of the month, is if it's trying to reduce your energy bills, these things are actually sustainability sort of focused as well. So it's not about having sustainability in a silo. It's about weaving it into every element of what you do as a business. And actually, yeah, putting solar PV on or looking at renewable energy is a way to reduce your energy bill. So it's kind of marrying up those priorities with a sustainability agenda, putting it in a context for businesses.
Mandy?
The circular economy, we really need lots of collaboration, and you see fantastic examples about businesses working together around the supply chain. We know that their customers are demanding transformation, their investors are, their supply chains are. The opportunity is there. There's so many resources. We know how to do this. We just want people to get on board. And if you're not sure, be curious, look into it. Somebody will have an answer and help you on that journey.
Fantastic. Mandy, Saul and Russ, I'm going to now refer to you as our net zero heroes. How about that? You'll take it. Yeah, fantastic. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Innovation Conversations, all about net zero.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Innovation Conversations. Recorded by Fresh Air Studios on location at Southwest Innovation Expo, Sandy Park, Exeter, on the 5th of March 2024. This podcast was produced as a joint venture between the University of Exeter and the University of Plymouth. Presented by Paul Philpott. Engineering and video editing by Mark Stevenson. Audio editing by Martin Burgess Moon. Production assistance by Lisa Hartwell. Producers for the University of Exeter, Marina Alto, Georgia Brown, and Andrew Dean. Producers for the University of Plymouth, Rich Adams and Melanie Jones. Copyright University of Exeter and University of Plymouth.